you're here for a reason. Like, let's try to help you and fix what's going on, you know, so it doesn't get worse, because it will always get worse. It will never get better until you know, correct the mouth posture or the tongue posture and the lip seal.
Yeah.
Ever. It will never get better. And that's something that we have to educate parents on all the time, you know, because once again, the kind of back to the statement of you can have a sibling, you know, have great health. I mean, great sleep, no mouth breathing, you know, wide enough jaws. And then, you know, the sibling that comes later or whatever, completely opposite child. You know, we've got poor quality of sleep, jaws aren't big enough, open mouth posture, tongue sits low. Why? They came from the same mom and dad. And sometimes we slap, you know, a label on those kiddos. And so parents don't like to talk about it. But oftentimes in my pediatric population, when a parent presents to a child, to us with a child who hasn't slept well, that is something that they're always like, well, they're just a really busy kid. Or, you know, the teachers said that, you know, they have a hard time listening in class. And
hello and welcome to another episode of Mouth Breathers. My name is Nathan, and you'll see that Dr. Chelsea Todd's not with us today. She's actually doing a presentation right now. So I'm here, and I'm here with Chelsea Hansen.
Hi, guys.
And you are a myofunctional therapist.
Yeah. Myofunctional therapist for Breathe Airway.
Nice. So today, I'm going to kind of ask you some questions, and we're going to talk about you and understand kind of your work and what you do and patients you see. So,
all right, sounds good.
Can't yeah, I guess let's start with kind of your background and education and how you became a malfunctional therapist.
Okay, well, I've been a hygienist for 16 years, and I worked for Dr. Lon McCrae, and not for those entire 16 years, but I worked for Lon for the last about 10 years of my career, and we took a course in Colorado. And it was regarding expansion airway. And in that course, they talked about myofunctional therapy. And it's something that's always been in the back of my head. And leaving that course, I knew that I needed to continue educating myself in this field because my own two children suffered. Well, at the time, I just had one child who was suffering, but he had some of the signs and symptoms of an airway issue. So I went home, did my research, and then within 4 months, I was already back taking a course in Las Vegas just for myofunctional therapy. And then from there, it just spiraled. I continued courses to become, you know, more qualified, because it is such a broad field. The myofunctional therapy space has a lot of different angles and approaches. So I just continued educating myself over the course of that next year, and then practicing myofunctional therapy in the dental setting. And then I opened my own practice with myofunctional therapy outside of McCrae Dental, and just found that I absolutely loved working with kids and adults and in that airway space, a little bit different than, you know, normal dental setting. And as a hygienist, it was absolutely different. So that's kind of how I got started. And I've continued, you know, educating myself for the past 6 years, just taking more courses and learning from other therapists, of course, learning from the docs I work with, and yeah, just continuing that path.
Interesting. Interesting. So what would you say, like, is a common patient you would see? Like someone who's coming in, they have some issues and they want kind of to be looked at by a myofunctional therapist. Or would you even say that most patients know kind of about what you do before they come in?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it depends on kind of their belief in health. A lot of patients don't even understand that, you know, mouth breathing is an issue, or that not sleeping well is an issue, or grinding or clenching their teeth is an issue, because we've normalized that in society. And even in the dental space, you know, as a hygienist for years, I would, you know, lecture somebody about, you got to brush your teeth better. You got to brush your teeth better. When really probably the root cause of it was they were a mouth breather.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even, had nothing to do with the, you know, the way they're brushing their teeth or lack thereof. And so what I would say that most patients who come to me who know what myofunctional therapy is have done their research, have looked online, you know, checked like, why isn't mouth breathing healthy? But from a clinician standpoint, somebody who doesn't know what I do, I tell them typically I just am a tongue therapist. I am somebody who works with training the tongue to sit where it's supposed to. And of course, that leads them into a plethora of questions. Where's the tongue supposed to sit? You know, why does it need to sit on the roof of my mouth? Why is mouth breathing not healthy? And how does grinding and clenching my teeth have anything to do with my quality of sleep? I wear a night guard. I've been wearing a night guard for 20 years. That's what I've been told to do. And so patients come from all different places with, you know, with seeking my help. And sometimes they have no idea why they would need tongue therapy, but I try to educate them and let them figure out for themselves the things that I can provide service for, such as mouth breathing, tongue to spot relationship. When I swallow, does my tongue come between my teeth? Does it touch my teeth? Am I sleeping and tossing and turning all night? And why, you know, or how can you help me? And that's typically kind of how a patient approaches me. Most people have no idea unless they've researched like the term mouth breathing on social media or Google or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I find it interesting that I feel like your guys' field, it's very modern and kind of not been done as like in the way you guys are doing it, where it's more of a holistic approach, mm-hmm. kind of try and solve the problem through either referring out or dealing with things in your practice. And I do find it interesting that, like you said, most people come to you with a bit of education or they've done a little bit of digging, because I think the average person probably just isn't educated on these things. So you do have to discover some of that stuff on your own and come to you guys with a bit of a idea that maybe this is an issue for them.
100%. Yeah. Some of our referral sources are dentists, of course. And, you know, the dentist will prep them a little bit like, hey, I see XYZ, you know, grinding, clenching, the tongue mobility is not there or whatnot. But most of the time, unless the dentist is educated, once again, they don't know even where to send a patient. You know, they now know that, you know, mouth breathing is not normal as well, and grinding and clenching is a problem. But most of the time, if they're not coming from a dentist who understands airway, they have to do the research on their own.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I've seen so much with people who kind of have these traits that you see, and that previous to this probably wouldn't have been correlated to mouth breathing, mm-hmm. And more people are becoming aware of that. And I think that in doing that and having those other practices, like say a dentist or a chiropractor or something like that, who can refer patients to you, is also very powerful. So I think just the broad education of things is really cool, which is, you know, exactly what Dr. Chelsea Todd's doing today. She's doing some education.
Absolutely. So yeah.
All that growing and everything is fascinating to me.
Well, and when we get a referral from a chiropractor or a cranial sacral therapist, they've been dealing with fascia forever. I mean, that's part of their career and training. So they understand the connection a little bit more. Not all do, but, you know, obviously the patients who are referring, or the specialists who are referring to us, understand it. And the need for somebody to address the fascia, the tongue ties, the, you know, forward head position that's maybe created by the tongue tie. And for years, you know, we've been releasing ties. It's not a new thing. It's been around since the beginning of time, really. Wet nurses used to release with a really sharp fingernail. That was kind of where that saying came from, or that's why a nurse had a sharp fingernail. But it's interesting because for a number of years, at least in the Treasure Valley, we haven't had a ton of myofunctional therapists. It's really hard to find a therapist who's trained just in oral facial dysfunction and ties. And so I think that's where it's really exciting to be on more of the cutting edge of therapy, for understanding that protocol, it's best to work with a therapist when we're releasing and dealing with fascia, so that way they can have optimal results when it comes to releasing a tie. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of fun because, like I said, there's just not a lot of myofunctional therapists out there.
Yeah. So. And I think the interesting part too is like when it comes to a tongue tie, at least before I worked here, I didn't really understand it too much. And realizing kind of the months between the tongue tie and how important that is, where you come in to that equation, it's not just simply, you know, releasing a tongue and sending you on your way. So could you talk to us a little bit about, you know, maybe some pre-prep work that you'd do with a patient, and then maybe things afterwards in terms of therapy?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll kind of just walk you through kind of what it looks like from a patient starting with me as a therapy. Through Breathe Airway, they always have a consultation, make sure, like, comprehensive consultation with our nurse practitioner, making sure they're healthy enough to, you know, proceed with any treatment that we do at our centers. Typically, they see Blair. She does the workup, gets measurements, palatal measurements, you know, checks on the CBCT airway, make sure that we have enough room for the tongue in the mouth to perform a release if a tongue tie is part of their diagnosis. Then they come to me. And from my initial intake, I also do more measurements. We do range of motion, meaning we check the ability of the tongue to elevate, to lateralize. We check the swallow, making sure that, you know, where the tongue placement is during the swallow. That's part of our therapy. And then that initial appointment, we actually are they're given exercises to go home with and perform. With my protocols, I don't very often do I say to somebody, you have to have a revision. You know, like there's just no way we're going to be able to do any therapy until the revision is done. But once again, that is very patient dependent and case selection dependent, because some patients have very, very limited range of motion and they've been compensating their entire life with this tie. And so for them, there's not a lot I can educate or do for them other than make them aware, you know, aware of their limitations. So we, you know, I give them an exercise and they're like, I can't do that. I can't, you know, move my tongue right and left at all or lift it to the roof of my mouth. I didn't even know, you know, that was what we were supposed to do. So it's very dependent on the patient's ability and the severity of the tie. And some patients don't even have a tongue tie. Some patients just have poor dysfunction, you know, very low tone, an inability to recognize the tongue in the space, inability to lip seal, inability to breathe through their nose for whatever reason. And some of those patients obviously need more specialty work. They'll have to go to an ENT. I don't address, you know, nasal obstructions and things like that. They need to go see a specialist. So we have to establish those types of things before I dive into too much therapy with the patient. And then from there, we're given exercises every single week. They meet with me. And then we decide together when they feel is best, along with the doctor who's performing the release, when it is best to do that release. Patients are different. Some patients need 4 weeks. Some patients need 6. I've worked with patients for 2 months. And then we've decided, you know, there's just a lot of compensations. We're using the floor of the mouth. We're using, you know, the cheek muscles. We're using forward head posture to make these movements. We're using the jaw with every single exercise we do. We have to look at a revision. Doesn't mean they have to do the revision, but we always, you know, talk about it if I feel that there's that need. Some patients don't want to do a tongue release, and that's okay. Either way, we do not force anybody into a release because it is a minor surgery, but we let them know that, you know, these compensations will continue to stay with all their movements because they're tied or restricted in a way that can't be overcome by just exercising and strengthening the tongue.
Interesting. So, this is kind of, I guess, more of a question for myself, but do we know why tongue ties happen, like in terms of why humans even have that happening or occurring?
That's a great question. I'll give you my limited knowledge on it, but it happens in utero. Most of the time there is a genetic component, but it is a process where it's a midline deficiency where the body doesn't, engulf the cells properly when the body is forming the fascia throughout the body. So it stays webbed or tied just like webbed toes. It's, you know, same type of concept would be the mm-hmm. tie just doesn't get removed by the body properly.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd never really thought about that. But it does seem like so many people are born with slight differences. And mm-hmm. it's crazy to me to think of how just a little tongue tie, which seems minor, but I mean, it has so much impact in people's lives.
Absolutely.
I think also coming on and discussing these things or sitting in the back and listening to you guys talk about these things was really, really interesting to me, was actually like the mental health or the things behind the scenes mm-hmm. that can be affected by, you know, mouth breathing, having a tongue tie, poor sleep, sleep apnea, all those kind of things, and how they can impact a child or an adult in terms of their mental health. Can you kind of speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, that's a loaded question because it's hard. It's a very sensitive subject for a lot of patients, especially parents who have children who have maybe signs of ADD or ADHD or some anxiety or depression or, you know, just a rambunctious child who can't sit still. And sometimes we slap, you know, a label on those kiddos. And so parents don't like to talk about it. But oftentimes in my pediatric population, when a parent presents to a child, to us with a child who hasn't slept well, that is something that they're always like, well, they're just a really busy kid. Or, you know, the teacher said that, you know, they have a hard time listening in class. And it's, you know, we have to tread lightly, make sure that we, you know, present what we can. And never, of course, we never try to like say that we're going to solve every child's wild behavior just because we, you know, fix their tongue tie or whatever. But you have to think about it, even from an adult's perspective, when we don't sleep well, you know, we are adults, we can understand that we can't act a certain way in society. You know, we can't run around, we can't lay on the floor and scream and cry when we have a bad day. I mean, you can, but it's not socially accepted. But with kiddos, they don't know how to deal with that, you know, lack of sleep and the vagal stimulation that they're not receiving in that fight or flight state they're always in. And so what happens is it presents with, you know, maybe a rambunctious child, maybe a child who doesn't care at all about anything too, or, you know, a child who can't regulate their emotions. They cry easily or they get angry easily. And so when we help a child stimulate the vagus nerve by putting the tongue on the palate for, you know, just simplicity, when you stimulate the vagus nerve, it takes that child out of that sympathetic fight or flight state and puts them in that parasympathetic rest and digest. And yes, it takes practice and it takes effort because there's a lot of things that have to happen internally as well as getting the tongue to sit in the roof of the mouth. But when a child can't do that, they very much act in a way that, you know, may not be socially accepted or we think is, you know, abnormal. Or, and in, I guess in society, sometimes we normalize it as well that, you know, kids are just supposed to act that way. But when we see a child who does get a good quality of sleep, you can definitely see the difference in behavior and emotional response to things that trigger, you know, a child every day. They're able to regulate that. They're able to internalize what's going on. And then from there, make, you know, a better decision or a better choice. And so, yeah, that's something that we face. I think most parents who come to us, that is one of their chief complaints is the behavior.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you think a lot of parents are kind of catching on to those things from maybe a behavioral standpoint, and then they're kind of doing some research on their own?
Yeah. What I see a lot is a parent will have multiple children, and they're like, you know, the older sibling was nothing like this. They, you know, they slept well, they, you know, did well in school or they're doing well in school. They don't have these, you know, emotional outbursts. And, you know, this child came along and completely opposite, but we parent the same way. We haven't done anything different. You know, there's got to be something that we're missing.
Right.
And I do think, you know, there's a lot of buzzwords about ADD and ADHD. And so people are familiar with that term. And there's a lot of people who don't just want to put their kiddos on medication, you know, that they want to try to find out if there's something going on. And there's a lot of great information now about correlating sleep and ADHD behaviors and the lack of sleep mimicking a child who may have ADHD or ADD.
Yeah.
Which I'm grateful for because, you know, I was kind of in that same situation with my kiddos or my oldest son, you know, just not doing very well in school, struggling to pay attention. And, you know, he had a very poor quality of sleep, never really had a dream, you know, was a mouth breather, all the things that I lecture, you know, kids on for years in my dental chair, mm-hmm. but never correlated it to, you know, tongue restriction or a lack of mobility in the tongue and unable to keep the tongue up, lips closed and using his nose. We've now fixed all that and he's doing great in school and life is great, but not to say that he's perfect, but
yeah,
that was kind of an eye-opening experience for me where I thought, wow, so many parents have got to be questioning this, you know, because we have great kids, mm-hmm. but there's a disconnect somewhere and it's in that tongue to spot relationship at night and decreasing that sympathetic response.
Yeah. Do you think as a mom and then also as a myofunctional therapist and having kids that have dealt with some of this stuff, do you think there's anything that your kids would say, oh, my mom always tells me not to do that, or my mom always tells me I need to be doing this? One of those things that, you know, you look back and your mom always would tell you a certain thing, but you as a myofunctional therapist, is there anything specifically that you kind of harp on your kids about?
Yeah, it's funny that you ask because we go through this almost on a daily basis. My older son, he's almost 15 now. He still mouth breathes. I hate saying that out loud, but he does. And so I oftentimes will touch his chin, like even if he's sitting in the couch or, you know, he's driving the car or whatever, I'll touch his chin. He's like, stop, mom. And it's just, I can't unsee it now, you know? I mean, he mouth breathes and it drives me nuts and he knows better. And sometimes I think he does it just to irritate me. But he has gone through myofunctional therapy. He, you know, he should be able to close his lips and he can use his nose, But once again, kids, you know, when they get ultra focused on something, or even as adults, you know, every one of us have mouth breathed before when we're focused or as a habit. Mm-hmm. So yeah, my son hates that I mention mouth breathing, and I am very aware of kiddos who like bite their fingernails and chew on their cuticles. Those are oral habits, and mm-hmm. oral habits are oftentimes a sign of a child who doesn't have great tongue-to-spot relationship and the ability to regulate themselves, because that's why they're putting fingers in their mouth or oral fixations to try to stimulate that vagus nerve. And so once again, if my kids are chewing on anything or they're biting their nails, I'm always, you know, take your hands out of your mouth. And as a therapist, I'm like, no, if somebody sees my kid's mouth breathing and sticking their fingers in their mouth, and they're like, wow, obviously she doesn't lecture what she preaches, or she doesn't
follow through with it,
at home with what she preaches to us on, you know, on our telehealth every week.
Interesting. Yeah, I think, I mean, just from being here and listening to you guys on the podcast, it's really made me kind of do some self-reflection. And I always had been a snorer throughout my life. And my parents both were snorers, and my mom's like very small. A lot of times with snoring, people think of like someone with a thick neck or someone who's like more on the heavier side, or a male. It's kind of how at least I would always think of things. But then, you know, there's always those people that are out there that are just, you know, little, and they don't really meet what you would think of a snorer. But so I guess to go back from that, I kind of have done some self-reflection and realized things and habits that I have from listening to you guys on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I think there's probably a lot of people out there that they don't know, they just aren't aware that they even do these things, or like they don't think about closing their mouth when they're just sitting around during their day. Mm-hmm. And I do think that there's so much power in just knowing. And it's kind of like how you're saying, people come into the office with a little bit of knowledge, because I mean, without knowing anything about mouth breathing or kind of airway health, they're probably not even going to, you know, take the step to come in. So I guess my question is, with people that come in to your office, how many of those people do you end up saying, actually, you know, you might have these issues, you might have poor quality of sleep, or you might have, you know, signs of ADHD or something like that, but really your oral health and what were you calling it? Tone and everything like that?
Yeah, tongue tone, tongue strength.
Yeah, and that all looked good. How often does that happen?
Never.
Never.
Never. Mm-mm. No.
So do you think that the vast majority of people have something to work on?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes. I very rarely see a sufficient airway. Very rarely. And by airway, I mean, you know, tongue tone, tongue space is adequate, meaning the mouth, jaws are okay, and that the understanding of how to use the nose properly is there and established. But once again, they're coming to us because whether or not they believe they have an issue, something inside of them was sparked by something somebody said.
Right.
Right. So whether or not they recognize it yet, they're eager because they resonated with something. You know, whether it was a chiropractor saying, you know, I feel like you're really tight, or, you know, you have this forward head posture I can't correct, or whatever. They recognize that that's not normal, or that, yeah, maybe there is something more going on. And I think that's intuition. I believe that we have that intuition. And so it's interesting because you said it, you know, best, that if you're not aware, you can't change or modify any behavior. Mm-hmm. And that's really, I feel like, my biggest job as a therapist. Is making patients aware of where the tongue should rest, where the lips should rest, how we should swallow, and what part of our body we should be breathing through, the nose or the mouth. Some people truly thought that mouth breathing was normal. They've done it their entire life, and they have no concept of how to even use the nose. You know, and people like that, those dysfunctions started really in utero. And so it's interesting because as we become more educated, you know, I think as society with tongue ties, mouth breathing, what's normal, what's not normal, behavioral snoring, all of those things, it's been normalized. I mean, like, everyone snores. Like, you hear that, you know, and people don't want to talk about it. That you it's interesting that you mentioned males, because males will always come in saying that their wife reports them snoring.
Yeah.
But females will very rarely be like, yeah, I snore, you know, because of the stigmatism that we have around snoring or whatnot. But it's interesting because that's a problem. Snoring is a problem. It's not normal, you know, and it doesn't matter if you're a small person or a big person. I mean, sometimes extra weight leads to more snoring, but you're exactly right. There can be, you know, you can be perfectly fit, have a great neck circumference and still be snoring. And it could be as simple as the tongue's in the wrong place. You know, that we just need to do some therapy to get the tongue stronger so it can sit on the roof of the mouth. You can then close the nose and use, or close the lips and then use the nose. So
yeah.
It can be very simple, but.
Is this more of a, because I have heard things about like food and chewing things and, you know, ease of all the foods we have nowadays are soft. So would you say that a lot of the things stem from kind of westernized lifestyle and diets? And do you see, and would you see, if you went to a different country or maybe like a more impoverished country, do you see the same sort of issues with those people in that population?
Yeah. And I'm taking a course right now actually on jaw space and how like to increase cranial facial growth and stuff at a young age, as early as infancy. But yeah, I would absolutely say that our diets have led to some of the small jaws. And you got to think about the mouth is the house for the tongue. So if the jaws are too small for the tongue only really has one place to go then, and that's down or out. So like out when we swallow and sitting down and low in the floor of the mouth to not block the airway, or that's, you know, the idea of what the body's trying to do. But because we don't chew hard foods as like we used to, or like some third world countries do, because we're afraid of choking, which is a whole nother, you know, segment we could do, literally just talk about why somebody chokes. But what happens when we don't chew, the bone doesn't remodel. So the jaws don't get larger at a young enough age. And then when the jaws aren't big enough, the tongue can't sit in the roof of the mouth because it feels like the space is too small. And it's going to follow the path of least resistance, which means down. And then from that down placement of the tongue, the jaws continue to get smaller because that palatal pressure from the tongue is not being applied on the roof of the mouth like it should be all day and all night. And so it's just a snowball effect. So the jaws are small, the tongue gets low, the jaws get smaller and smaller as we grow. And then we get that forward head posture, that down forward growth in the jaws instead of that big, broad, beautiful palate that we want. And it just continues to cascade until it's caught, typically by an orthodontist or a dentist, at age 12.
Mm.
But now we are full. I mean, we're growing. Our cranial facial growth is almost done for both male and females. And now we've got an issue because now we have mouth breathing, more snoring, you know, maybe some food sensitivities. Now we've got texture issues maybe because the tongue can't maneuver the food properly. Now we don't eat as many foods or variety of foods because of textures, and the effects just start to pop up very clearly in, you know, that age range between, I would say, like 10 and 15, where mom, you know, we have the behavioral issues, small jaws, mouth breathing, a lot of cavities. I mean, there's a numerous things that can happen because it all started with the small jaws, not chewing, not masticating, not growing the jaws, not getting the tongue up in the roof of the mouth, opening that airway at night so we can breathe properly. And then, of course, the lip sill that creates, you know, the nasal breathing that, you know, creates a healthier child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what's crazy, too, is so many people are nowadays are very, I guess the word would be like vain. You know, everyone's worried about how they look and how they're perceived online and things like that. But I do find it interesting that, like you said, some things are genetic, but a lot of it's kind of like lifestyle. And so I've seen studies out there about like twins and how they would be, you know, one was raised by their mom, one was raised by their dad or something like that. Or one I heard something about an allergy with like a hamster. And then it like changed the way that their face looked. And then if you saw their sibling, they looked like completely different. And just how much kind of lifestyle factors play into that. Because I think a lot of people think about those kind of things in terms of more genetics. And it's interesting to see, like, you know, two people with basically identical genetics and they still, you know, it shows how much lifestyle changes things.
Absolutely. And that's something that we have to educate parents on all the time, you know, because once again, the kind of back to the statement of you can have a sibling, you know, have great health. I mean, great sleep, no mouth breathing, you know, wide enough jaws. And then, you know, the sibling that comes later or whatever, completely opposite child, you know, we've got poor quality of sleep, jaws aren't big enough, open mouth posture, tongue sits low. Why? They came from the same mom and dad. But once again, it goes back to, you know, what you had talked about is, you know, what are they eating that may be different? You know, do they have, did they have a tongue tie and the older one did not? Because that does happen. Not every single sibling in somebody who's tongue tied is going, or not everybody who has a tie is going to have children that have ties. That's not always the case, as we know in genetics. But oftentimes you have to look at what is different, what happened differently. You know, maybe they did have a severe allergy and it didn't allow them to breathe through their nose. And then from that lack of nasal breathing, we got that forward head posture. We got that open mouth posture, that tongue not sitting in the roof of the mouth. The jaws kind of collapsed in on themselves. And then from there, the snowball effect happened again. You know, the poor quality of sleep, the continuation of that fight or flight sympathetic response. And, you know, the cranial facial growth wasn't there because the tongue didn't sit where it was supposed to sit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe the hard food diet was different too because of allergies.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of variables.
And then when someone would come to you and say, I can't breathe through my nose, I can't.
Yeah.
How much of that is true? And then how much of it is more of a practice and, you know, it kind of opening the more you use it? Is that a true statement or is it just truly that some people can't really breathe through their nose?
Yeah, that's a good question. All are true. Like, yes, some people can't breathe through their nose. Mostly you find that in adults. That's not very common in kiddos or adolescents that they just can't use their nose. The statement, if you don't use it, you lose it, is very true when it comes to the nose. If they've had a facial injury, you know, they've been punched in the nose or traumatic event where the nose has been injured, yes, the septum could be crossed, you know, one side could not be being used and they might need to see an ENT for something like that, of course. And we do make a lot of ENT referrals. We don't claim to be specialists in that, you know, the nose area, especially as a therapist. I never claim that. But in order to do myofunctional therapy, you have to be able to use your nose. So that is kind of a groundwork, like one of the first levels of groundwork we have to, you know, unpeel is like, can they use their nose? If they can't, we gotta address that. But most people not being able to use their nose is what they believe. It's not true. But they've never used it, so they really don't know how to use it. And you got to think about it too. If you don't know where to put your tongue, it's going to be hard to use your nose. If the tongue is going to sit at the floor of the mouth, it's very difficult to push air through your nose. But when you teach somebody to put the tongue up and rest in the proper place in the palate, the base of the tongue clears the airway, and it actually makes it very easy to use the nose. So it's something I do even in my initial intakes with kiddos. I have them close their lips and put the tongue on the roof of the mouth and sit there and we try to breathe, you know, for a minute, just strictly through the nose. Some kiddos are excellent at it and can do it immediately and they're like, oh, that feels good. And some kids can not even do 5 seconds, you know. And I try to do a little test with them where I put the tongue up and try to use your nose and then put the tongue down and try to use your nose and see which one feels different. And I get mixed reviews on this. Sometimes the kids are like, oh, it feels better when my tongue's down. That's not what I want to hear. But that's a habit they've mm-hmm. established. So they've learned to use their nose with their tongue down, but it's not consistent. And they really can't achieve that throughout the night. The tongue needs to be up to clear the base of the tongue through the airway to use the nose properly. So most people can use their nose, but they never have or they've never been taught how to use it properly. And we do recommend nasal saline. We recommend nasal regimen on all of our patients. Even if you're not doing therapy, if you just want to be healthier, use a nasal saline every single day. Make sure it doesn't have, you know, steroids in it and things like that. You want to make sure it's very natural. But just putting something in the nose to make you aware that you can use it is very beneficial for health.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing too that stands out to me is a lot of times people will say it's like it's too late. But from what I've heard, no matter what age you're at, you can come in and, you know, have a consultation and learn some things that you can do to better your airway health. With that being said, there is some importance of trying to kind of correct the issues early in childhood, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Earlier habits habit change is always easier than later life habit change, right? I mean, but I mean, having said that, I have worked with, I think my oldest patient's probably in the late 70s and very successful, had a revision, went through therapy, graduated therapy, you know, able to learn to use his nose. And he really, I mean, he believes he never has in his entire life. He, you know, can't remember when he was a young kid, but yes, if we can correct the problem early on, the snowball seems to be smaller.
Yeah.
Right. And if, especially in infancy, if we can correct the tongue tie in infancy and then, you know, get them an oral appliance to grow the jaws and learn for that tongue to go up and close those lips and use the nose, you're going to see way less dysfunction and obviously way easier to train an infant who doesn't know dysfunction or doesn't understand dysfunction than a kiddo who's, even a kiddo who's, you know, 10 or 11, who's been doing this type of, you know, oral dysfunction, whatever it may be, whether it's floor of the mouth, forward head posture, open mouth posture. It's way easier to correct that when they're younger than when we get older.
Yeah.
And we're more stubborn when we're older too. I have a lot of patients, especially like the 40-year-olds are like, I've been doing this for 40 years. I haven't slept good in 40 years. It doesn't matter at this point. I'm like, oh, you're here for a reason. Like, mm-hmm. let's try to help you and fix what's going on, you know, so it doesn't get worse, because it will always get worse. It will never get better until you, you know, correct the mouth posture or the tongue posture and the lip seal.
Yeah.
Ever. It will never get better.
Yeah. Well, you said you had a 70-year-old patient who was able to graduate and breathe through his nose. Do you have any other patients that stand out to you that are particularly unique or kind of interesting case or seen awesome results, anything like that?
Yeah, I've had a lot of really cool experiences. One that really stands out to me is I had a boy in his early teens who would literally eat five foods. And mom was so frustrated, and he was frustrated because he was nervous to go to friends' house because he didn't know if they were going to have food that he could eat or that he would like. He was also a bedwetter and had never had a sleepover because he felt embarrassed. And he had been in speech therapy, really since kindergarten, you know, and he'd been on and off where he'd graduated the program. And then mom would hear speech sounds creep back up. And so she'd, you know, enroll him back in speech. And mom was just kind of didn't know what to do, didn't know how to help him. And he was also having severe anxiety at school, just not doing very well. And they came to us with an initial consult, and I think her chief complaint was picky eating. I think that's, and she had done some research online and said that, you know, it could be related to a tongue tie. Mm. And so that was her initial complaint. And when we started getting into this case, it was Dr. Todd and I working this case. It was very extensive. You know, he had a lot of the red flags that we see with a kiddo who is tongue tied, and come to find out he was severely tongue tied. And we were able to work very slowly with this patient. We did have to bring in some food therapy and a speech therapist after he graduated myofunctional therapy again, because he had a, you know, new tongue, all this mobility that he had never had before. And we had to retrain how to, you know, say certain sounds and whatnot. And same with the food therapy. I took him through myo, all the way through myo. And I believe we brought the food therapist in halfway through, though, because I knew it was a little bit more than my expertise could handle. But this child was able to, by the time he graduated, he was eating and trying, which was huge for mom and him, over 20, 30 foods. And he would try different textures, which mom had never seen him try. You know, he was very particular with what he'd put in his mouth or even have on his plate at the dinner table. And he was just elated. The kid, and as far as from day one to the ending of therapy, and it was about a 6 months. He was in therapy with me for about 6 months, along with other therapies. By the end of when he graduated, he had able to stay at his cousin's house. He had a sleepover for the first time. Bedwetting wasn't completely resolved. Once again, he'd been bedwetting for 13 years, but he was able to go, you know, about 4 or 5 days without having an accident. And for him, that was just huge success. And for mom, and I'm sure still to this day, he's doing wonderful. I should call and check back in. It's been probably about 2 years since I followed up with him. But he was able to eat new foods, not wet the bed, and he could use his nose, something that he didn't even know, you know, he was supposed to do, really.
Yeah.
But just huge successes like that just make you realize it's worth it. You know, even if you can change one person's life, and not just his life, you know, think of the cascading effect that that's going to have for, you know, him if he chooses to become a parent, and, you know, the education he can share, and the people in his life that saw his change, you know, as wow, maybe, you know, maybe I have something I should look into. Because it happens all the time where a family member will see something change in somebody else and like, oh, I do that. I want to change this behavior. I want to be better, or, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah, that makes sense. Food therapy.
Yeah.
That's not something. So was it a textural issue for him for the most part?
Oh, well, that's,
or was
yeah,
it just kind of that's a lot.
So when a child or adult or somebody is tongue tied, they can't maneuver the food properly in their mouth for just a lack of ease, right? Like they can't go right and left their tongue, or they don't know how to properly use their cheeks to help with the food. So what happens is it triggers a gag response because they can't move the food properly. And when that gag response is triggered, especially at a young age, and they, we don't understand, the patient doesn't understand, you know, like why it was triggered. They associate certain textures maybe as unsafe, or certain foods as unsafe. And then pretty soon the list just kind of, compounds. And so when they eat something and they don't have that gag response, it's safe. And so they'll stick to those foods that didn't trigger that response. Mm. And then pretty soon, it doesn't even always make sense, you know? Like this mom was like, you know, he used to eat all of these things, and then he just slowly started taking them out of his diet. And even the patient didn't understand why. You know, when I mentioned this to him, he was like, no, that I don't think that happens. And I was like, okay, well, that's fine. You know, you never want to question them because they don't know what's going on, because it's been ingrained in them for so long. They don't know how to get out of it. You know, it's become a habit now, like that. Nope, I only eat yellow Cheetos that are crunchy because those ones are safe. If I eat the red ones, they don't. They're not safe, or, you know, for whatever reason. But they had a memory or a response, and it's almost like a PTSD or like a trauma response that the body kind of protects that patient from, because they had a bad experience and they gagged or they almost choked or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And not everybody has that response. Some people can gag on a food and try it again.
Right.
But that's not always the case, especially with somebody who is hypersensitive because they have really poor quality of sleep.
Yeah. I mean, that actually makes a lot of sense, because like there's been times in the past where I've like, you know, loved a restaurant, and then you eat there and you get sick or something like that, and you just never go there again.
That's right. Yeah.
And absolutely. You don't actually even think about it. You're just like never interested in going there again.
Yep.
Yeah. Fascinating. So tell the listeners, a lot of times, say I called someone and I said, I'm super flexible, right? I'm like the most flexible person ever. And they're like, okay, well, can you touch your toes? And then I go to touch my toes, and I can't get anywhere near there. And then they can tell me pretty easily just from doing something like that, well, you're probably not the most flexible person ever. Is there some sort of exercise or test or something that a listener could do to almost get a very minimal idea of if they have any issues?
Well, like a tongue tie directly related to maybe like the tongue tie issue?
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's go back to it. Any myofunctional therapy issue. How about that?
Yeah.
So, one thing is, if you can close your lips and use your nose, you don't even have to worry about where your tongue placement is. If you can do that for a minute, you know, maybe you have great nasal passage and you're fine. You know, that doesn't mean that you don't have a tongue tie. That doesn't mean that you have great tongue tone, but it means that you can use your nose. So that'd be the first step to nasal breathing, that you can use it, right? If you could open your mouth and elevate your tongue to the roof of your mouth without pulling the floor of your mouth up. Yep. So, very good.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you can elevate your tongue, that's pretty good. Not everybody can even elevate their tongue. If you can't elevate your tongue, you may have a restriction.
Interesting.
I get this a lot. Patients are like, well, my kid can stick their tongue all the way out of their mouth to their chin. That's not a great exercise to prove whether or not you have a tie. Because if you do have a tie, the tongue can go down and out easier than it can elevate.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you can elevate your tongue, that's probably pretty good. If you can breathe through your nose with your lips closed, that's probably a pretty good sign. If you can stick your tongue out of your mouth and move right and left and not move your lower jaw, though, that's pretty good. Then you probably have some good mobility. But do you know where your tongue sits? Does it sit up or down?
It's one of those things that I think before listening to you guys, I actually don't even remember because it just wasn't something that I'd think about. But yeah, definitely now I'm always kind of like catching myself and shutting my mouth putting my tongue up. So
if I see a patient who's like, oh, that just feels so foreign to close my lips, chances are you have a tongue dysfunction.
Yeah.
To close your lip should be very second nature to everyone, right?
Yeah.
But if you have a tongue tight or you can't use your nose, the mouth's going to open, the tongue's going to sit low every time. And we always think of mouth breathing as like these really obvious open mouth postures where we're walking around just.
Yeah.
Very few people do that because we know in society there's social norms. And that is not a aesthetically pleasing way to carry your face or your mouth, right? So people think that, well, I just part my lips just a little bit. Like.
Yeah, so they're mouth breathing, but it's just
mouth breathing.
Yeah, it's just not very apparent.
Well, and it's unfortunate that I think Hollywood, if you look at a magazine, I do this all the time at the, you know, the supermarket or whatever. If you look at beauty, most of the time, women have their mouth open.
That's true.
They do.
Yeah.
Or they have like the pucker lips or their, you know, slightly open mouth or the tongue.
Like very relaxed look.
The tongue sitting out of the mouth in, you know, a certain manner. I see that and I'm just like, oh no, that's horrible. Like, that's the worst thing we could teach, you know, a child, especially a young girl who may be looking at that model for beauty or oral facial resting posture. Like, no, we should be closing our lips and, you know, teaching them, you know, use your nose. The nose is best. But
they need to have magazines with the lips nice and closed and the nose flaring.
That's right. Lip seal and those big, broad faces. That's what we want, you know? I mean, we always think of like, well, beauty is always, you know, the really slender chin and jawline. And let's get those big, broad jawlines and lip seal and breathing through the nose. That means your jaws are big, your airway is big, you're getting great sleep, you know.
Yeah.
Let's push that. But
yeah,
it's not what Hollywood wants, I guess. So.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's been great talking to you. You have some patients to go see.
Yes, I do.
So I'll let you close out and maybe tell people where they can find you.
All right. Well, come and see us. We're at Breathe Airway. Our location's in Meridian, Linder and Chinden. Very easy to find. We're there Monday through Friday. So give us a call and we can get you set up for a consult with Blair. And then you can come and see me if need be.
Perfect. Well, it was good talking. And we'll see you on the next one.
Awesome. Thanks. Appreciate it, Nate.
Yep. Bye-bye.